Hello and welcome to another episode of Fool's Daily. Just me on my own today, and I thought I would talk about something that popped through my letterbox this morning, which is the new saga book, The Crescent and the Cross, which I'm still going to call Cross and Crescent, because that's what I always thought it was called. This is the sort of second edition of Saga, if you will. It moves the time period on from the Dark Ages to the times of the First Crusade, so maybe 200 years. Though it is supposed to be compatible with the first version of Saga. If you're not aware of what Saga is, it's a historical game where you play with small warband-sized forces, and it uses a very innovative battle board mechanic, where basically you roll a certain number of dice, which depends on your formation, and you assign those dice to different orders that you can give your troops. And then when you execute your orders, you basically take the dice off the battle board. So you might assign dice to make your models charge or activate a particular unit, those sort of things. And if you don't assign dice to a particular area of the battle board, then you can't do those actions. The other interesting thing about it is the way that the armies are built, in that there's sort of three troop types. There is your half guard, who are your sort of elite warriors, your warriors, and your levies. And it doesn't matter what force you're playing, you get the same three troop types, and in the same sizes. So Saga games are based to a certain point limit, and for 1 point you can either get 4 Hearthguard, 8 Warriors, or 12 Levies. And that's it. It makes it designing your force very, very simple, and you know how many figures you have to have, and you know what your opponent's figures are, and you know, Hearthguard versus Hearthguard, they're the same stats, etc. So it all cancels out quite nicely. So it's the battle board that gives the unique abilities for each force, and that's what makes them distinct. So the game's been around for 4.5 years-ish, and has gone through pretty much every force you could think of from the Dark Ages. Pagan, Rus, Byzantines, Danish, Welsh, Anglo-Saxon, you know, basically big hairy men with axes. That's what it was. But now it's moved on, and now we're into the time of the First Crusade. So we have Normans, you know, the Crusaders. We have various Islamic factions, the Moors, the Saracens, you know, Saladin. And they've sort of taken the time to present it. I don't know if it's presented as a new edition or presented as a supplement, though it is a standalone rulebook, or is presented as a new version of the same game. It's not the easiest thing to work out the positioning, but basically, if you buy Crescent and Cross, you don't need to buy any of the previous Saga rulebooks, unless you particularly want the battle board for one of those forces. Now, one of the things they do say is that the battle boards are compatible, so you could play out of historical games. So if you want your Anglo-Saxons fighting the Moors, then have at it. The boards are all supposed to be compatible. So, moving on to the book. First thing that you notice compared with the Dark Ages saga, it's a hardback compared with a paperback. They've really upped the production quality. It's, you know, full hardback. It's now on that glossy paper that, you know, top quality rule books are bound in these days. It's very much like a GW codex, if you will. And it's full color without, throughout. And to ease new, old players into it when they pick it up, the first thing you see is a call-out box with a character called Ragnar in it. Now, people who are familiar with the original saga know that there were call-out boxes throughout the rule books where basically Ragnar, a Viking lord, would explain points of the rules to you. So think of it as an editor's note sort of thing. And he makes a welcome return. The first thing he says is basically welcomes the old players to the game. And he goes throughout the book pointing out where differences are from the new rules and rules that Saga players will be familiar with. Flicking through the book, and I haven't given it a full read because it literally came through my letterbox about an hour ago. There don't seem to be that many places where things are different, and in fact, it really seems that what they have done is tighten things up. Now, one of the first things that you notice when you tighten it up is there is a section called figure bases. I can hear old-time Saga players cheering because there were no defined figures bases, and so you could base it how you wanted, and it could lead to wacky and strange basing. So now they've sort of locked down the basing, and it's locked down to what most people thought. Effectively, single figures, and it's 28mm game, so, you know, single figures, 2 to 3 centimeter bases. Pretty much everyone I know has them on 2Ps. So 25mm disc, so slap in the middle. Cavalry, basically put them on cavalry bases. And the exception is for your warlords, so you can put, if you've got your warlord and he's on a fancy base, so my, barbarian warlord is on a 40mm base. You can have them on 40 to 50mm bases without a problem. And if they're mounted, they can go slightly bigger. He's your warlord, he's supposed to be imposing. One of the other things I noticed is that they seem to have upped the size of the game slightly. I'm pretty sure, and I haven't gone back and looked, but I'm pretty sure that the recommended size for Dark Ages games was 4 to 6 points. The games of Saga are now recommended to be between 4 to 8 points, with 6 being the norm. With just 4-point warbands being as sort of a learning game. And they address this, and they, you know, Ragnar says you can stop groaning about having to get some more figures. I mean, he doesn't like more toys. And, you know, 2 extra points of Hearthguard is only 8 more models. So it's not a massive investment. It then, we sort of continue through, and if you're familiar with Saga, then the rules will be continued. Now, there is a new character that is introduced who is, who's effectively the Ragnar replacement, and he is Hashim ibn Khalid ibn Abib, or something. Hashim, I shall call him from now on. And he, right at the beginning, he points out that basically Saga boils down to this. It's a game where you roll the Saga dice, weigh up the options you have with the symbols rolled, and place the dice in boxes on your battle board to plan your strategy for the turn. Once you've understood that, you're halfway through understanding the game. And it really is. The whole battle board mechanic is what makes Saga so great, and is what makes it so interesting and tactically different. Because obviously, you know, everyone, the warriors are all the same. You're not differentiated by stats, you're differentiated by how you're doing things. So, the book then flows through the rules, which for long-time Saga players will be basically familiar. There's a lot of tightening up of where people were sort of playing gamey tricks with things like combat and when you get models get removed in melee, etc. And then that's sort of half the book, and then you come to the factions. And the factions are... So the factions are the Crusaders, who are basically the men who went to try and get the Holy Land back. The Saracens, you know, traditional opponents, as I say, Saladin. The Milites Christi, which is a... They're sort of from the Frankish states that formed around Syria. So they're sort of knights in on horses. If you've ever seen a picture of a knight in a horse and he's sort of in black with white crosses, that's them. Another word I can't pronounce, the Mulla Ala Waji, which apparently is an Arabic term that means volunteer. So that's sort of a religious group. And then the two that I'm interested in, which is the Spanish, not so much interested in them, to be honest. I mean, they're Spanish. And, you know, obviously they were fighting against North Africa. And then the Moors, who are the Muslim people from Spain and North Africa. If you've ever seen the movie El Cid, that these are the two forces for there. And Moors are what I'm going to play. I just like the ideas of them. Ideas of them. Ben Youssef and the Black Guard. Don't think you can go wrong with those. And then there's a series of scenarios. I haven't gone through the scenarios yet to see how different they are from the scenarios in the original rules. But, you know, we'll soon know how they are. Now, I missed out one important thing when I jumped to the factions, is that there is a new type of hero. And this new type of hero is the priest. Now you can have you can include priests in your Dark Age, warbands as well. He costs a point. He's a single figure in the same way as a warlord is. And the stats you get depend on the type of him. You activate like priests, and as far as the battle board's concerned, they are warlords, but you don't get warlord's pride and things for them. And you can also turn your warlord into a priest if that's what you want. There's a call-out box that enables you to include these in the Dark Ages as well. And they're quite an interesting type of thing. It's sort of introducing a new special character type to the game without having to, have special characters per se. Because obviously they have heroic characters in the game, though I don't know that anyone, I don't know anyone who actually plays those. It's quite interesting. So I thought, you know, we've got a few minutes left. I thought if we take a quick look at one of the boards, then we can see the sorts of abilities that they have. So if we look at the Moors board, hey, that's a surprise. They obviously have the standard activation type things. You have, the ability to activate a unit of Hearthguards or the Warlord, the Warriors or a Levies. Standard roll 2 extra saga dice. But then you have the interesting abilities. So, you can modify your opponent's saga boards using corruption. There's an activation one. Activate all your units that are not equipped with ranged weapons. For the cost of 2 dice, that could be pretty good. And then there's various attack ones. There's various ones that enable you to play about with your opponents and their fatigue. So there's Discord. You add one fatigue to a unit that's within medium of the resting unit. So effectively what happens when your opponent activates a unit to rest, you can instantly spend one of your dice to give a unit within medium of the resting unit a fatigue. So you're sort of transferring the fatigue around and keeping your opponents slowed up. My particular one at the moment is Betrayal. You designate an enemy warrior or levy unit made up of up to six models that is more than medium away from the warlord. And until the end of the current turn, this unit is considered part of your warband. If he is not exhausted, the enemy warlord can take three fatigues to cancel the ability. So basically, you can take control of a unit of warriors and go, ha, you're mine now. And the warlord has to basically run around going, no, no, stop, stop, stop. Otherwise, you get to control them, which, you know, if you're suddenly, your opponent's poised to do something and you suddenly take control of his warband, then that can be pretty devastating. So, that's sort of it. The book is, how many pages is the book? Yeah, it's 99, 115. So the book's 120 pages, full hardback, and then you get six battle boards as well, for the princely sum of £30, which you can get, and you can get it from, Gripping Beast directly, or, probably from other, online retailers as well. Well, hopefully that's not been a complete waste of 17 minutes of your life. So until next time, I've been Mike. Bye bye. You can contact Fools Daily on Twitter, we're @fools_daily, or via email, foolsdaily@outlook.com.